Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, European and African leaders pledge to work together to fight human trafficking and illegal migration, among others, at the end of a two-day summit in Brussels.
If we're concentrating on skilling our people, on investing in them, they will not have to come through Lampedusa. They'll come through the airports and the ports and they'll be welcome.
And at least one in every five South Africans lives below the poverty line, and the inequality margin keeps widening, according to new statistics.
It's not good for a majority of South Africans. Show me a country in the world where people go on the streets carrying poo to make a statement that they don't have sanitation.
These are some of the stories we've lined up for you, and I'll be right back with the details.
Top story.
European and African leaders pledged on Thursday to work together to fight human trafficking and illegal migration by improving the economic, social and security conditions in Africa. The aim is to convince young Africans that they have a better future at home. The leaders also called for the fight against climate change to be stepped up. Africa contributes only a fraction of the world's greenhouse gases, but is one of the chief victims of climate change. This report by Christoph Hasselbach has been adapted for Africa Link by Susan Holton.
Europe appears to be rediscovering Africa. European representatives in Brussels were ceaselessly underlining Africa's importance and the common ground it shares with Europe. Bilateral trade has expanded quickly in recent years, and some of the world's fastest-growing economies are now in Africa. The president of the EU Commission, José Manuel Barroso, said Africa and Europe also had to cooperate with one another because of the problems they shared.
When terrorism expands in the Sahel or in the Horn, or when migration flows become unmanageable, it is a threat to both Africa and to Europe.
Europeans and Africans are already working together in several trouble spots, such as Mali or Central African Republic. While both agree that Africa should solve its own problems, including security issues, this is not always possible, as Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz, president of the African Union, admitted.
Even when we have troops who can intervene in a crisis, we lack transport and deployment capabilities. This is where the European Union plays an important role.
Without security, there can be no development, both sides say. Africa needs development so that the fast-growing population can find work. For Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, the AU Commission President, this is particularly important.
If we can ensure that our young people have a stake in the future, they have jobs, they've got professions, it would be very difficult to entice them to go into crime, drugs, or to be trafficked.
And the Europeans believe fewer of them would attempt the risky journey here. Security issues threaten to push the issue of climate change to the sidelines. This prompted Chadian President Idriss Deby to complain that
climate change is a worldwide phenomenon, but the continent which is least responsible, Africa, is suffering directly from the consequences. Lake Chad is disappearing.
The lake has shrunk to one-tenth of its size in 1970. One particularly controversial issue took on a personal note when Belgian Prime Minister Elio Di Rupo called on the assembled heads of state and government to respect the rights of minorities, including those who are persecuted because of their sexual orientation. The guests included the presidents of Nigeria and Uganda, where draconian laws against homosexuals have recently become law. Di Rupo makes no secret of his homosexuality. However, the summit ended with these diplomatic words from EU Council President Herman Van Rompuy.
Even where we don't agree, we can have an honest conversation and seek common ground for moving forward together.
Susan Holton presented that report. In an exclusive interview, DW's Christoph Hasselbach spoke with the EU Commissioner for Development, Andris Piebalgs, about the challenges ahead. He first asked the Commissioner whether there could really be a partnership of equals between the two continents.
I think we are already now equals. Each of our countries have one vote in United Nations. And if I say economic growth, well, South Africa is part of the BRICS, and the growth in Africa in average is 5 to 7 to 8, and then some countries 10%. So I believe it is already partnership at equals. I even don't like this call for being equals. In European Union, I believe that we are equal countries, but still Germany is by far more powerful than my native country, Latvia. But I don't feel different from my German colleagues.
What do you expect Africa to do?
Security cooperation, I believe, is crucial. Second is economic cooperation. It's a lot of sensitivity about migration. But if you see the population growth in Africa, you could see that it is a challenging opportunity for us. And I believe in our strategic interest is strengthen investments in African countries that say more jobs created. It's very clear that Africa is the continent next door with whom we have rather decent relations, but it should be strengthened.
Now, China is very present in Africa economically, and as opposed to the European Union, it doesn't ask any awkward questions about democracy and human rights and so on. What has the EU to offer Africa that China hasn't got to offer?
I think Africans have long worked with us, they know us, and their political systems are built in most of the cases on the examples of European system, French or British system. I believe also we are better in so-called ownership. We really discuss what the country would need. We really engage. We also transfer knowledge, technology, and we are very open, good partner. China is definitely investing, but it's not investment with such a depth of transformation. So I believe we still are, in for Africa, a privileged partner.
There are some absentees, like Zimbabwe's President Mugabe or al-Bashir from Sudan, or even South African President Jacob Zuma. As far as I know, two of them were invited, but they chose not to come, and al-Bashir wasn't invited. Where's the red line when you say we don't cooperate with that country or with that government?
I think the first is definitely democracy, because we need to work with democratically elected leaders. Then there is a human rights issue. The indictment of ICC is something that you can't neglect. So I believe we invited Sudan, but we could not invite al-Bashir, because if he comes here, our duty is to arrest somebody who is not going to Hague to respond for offenses he has been accused of. But attendance, I would say, is very good, and I would not read there is something very political in absentees. I think it's they did it for domestic political reasons, not so much that really we have a problematic relationship.
That was the EU's Commissioner for Development, Andries Spielbergs, in an exclusive interview with DW's Christoph Hasselbach.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
South Africa's Bureau of Statistics has released a report that says government grants helped reduce poverty during 2006 and 2011. According to the report, the government managed to take 4 million people out of poverty during those 5 years. But the reality in South Africa paints a grim picture where 1 in every 5 people still lives below the poverty line, and the gap between the rich and the poor keeps widening. The report has left a cross-section of South Africans angry with their government, which they say has not done enough. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo sent this report.
Out of 27 million South Africans who lived below the poverty line in 2006, only 23 million remained in 2011. This was revealed by the Poverty Trends report released on Thursday. Presenting the report to the media in Pretoria, Statistician General Palile Khohla said the 5-year survey involved a survey in households where people were asked about their income, expenditure, and social services at their disposal.
From 2006, poverty has declined from 56% to about 46%, so that 56 people out of 100 who were in poverty in 2006, that compares now to 46.
Although South Africa's unemployment has increased due to the shrinking economy as a result of both global and domestic factors, Lehotla said the government's programs of cushioning the poor had a large contribution in pushing the 4 million poor people out of poverty. According to the government, 16 million South Africans are receiving social grants. These include the old people's grants and children whose parents are not working, and 3.3 million houses built by the government in the past 20 years, benefiting millions of poor South Africans. But Mbuyiselo Dlozi, spokesperson for the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, says the current nationwide service delivery protests are telling another story.
The anger is legitimate because things are not right. It's not good for a majority of South Africans. There is no good story to tell. Show me a country in the world where people go on the streets carrying poo to make a statement about the fact that they don't have sanitation.
And Nombulelo Yaso, a resident of Bekkersdal informal settlement just outside Johannesburg, says for her, poverty has worsened.
We don't have houses here, and we've been staying here in Bekkersdal for a long time. I came in 1990, but I still don't have a house. We get water from far away, since there's only one tap for everyone. We have no electricity. We are suffering here.
The government has long admitted that although a lot has been achieved, there is still much needed for almost half of the population that sleep and wake up in poverty day and night.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting from Johannesburg. To Nigeria next, where the High Court in Lagos has issued a restraining order preventing the police and state security services from arresting the suspended governor of the central bank, Lamido Sanusi. It also ordered the return of his confiscated passport and awarded him 50 million naira, that is $300,000, in damages. The judge also ordered the government to tender a public apology for wrongful arrest. Sanusi was suspended in February by President Goodluck Jonathan after he accused the powerful state oil firm of stealing nearly $20 billion of public funds. I've been talking to our correspondent in Lagos, Sam Olukoye, to find out if the ruling came as a surprise.
When you have cases like this, it's sometimes very difficult to know where the whole thing will tilt. So for many, it's a surprise. For others, they feel, I mean, the court has really spoken, and that exactly is how it should be.
We understand Sanusi is being investigated for financing terrorism activities. What more can you tell us about these allegations?
Many will say this came as an afterthought. I mean, when what they actually said was that they're investigating Sanusi on charges of misappropriation of funds. So the issue of financing terrorism is coming quite late in the day, and many will assume that maybe government is just desperately trying to find faults against this man. Many will see it as some very, very flimsy excuses to give this man a very bad name.
Is the judgment an indirect criticism of President Goodluck Jonathan, who has also been very critical of the central bank governor?
Yes, I think the judgment definitely is a major setback for President Goodluck Jonathan. From day one, when Mr. Sanusi was removed from office, many have questioned why that could happen. And as you know, he was removed from office after he made some allegation that so much money had been stolen from the coffers of the State Petroleum Corporation. And when Jonathan gave explanation as to why he was removed, he said that was to give room for investigation, which for many doesn't hold much weight, because so many people in government, some of these close to President Goodluck Jonathan, have been accused of fraud, and none of these people have been removed from office. So it seemed as if Sanusi is being singled out for investigation because he blew the whistle, alleging that so much money had been missing.
What do ordinary Nigerians think of the charges leveled against Sanusi?
Majority of people, I will say, are quite sympathetic to Sanusi. Some believe that at the level to which we have corruption in Nigeria, it was very right for somebody who has seen so much happening to raise his voice, and many will actually say he is courageous.
I was speaking to Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to our Learning by Ear series, Human Rights Are Universal and Yet. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights is a fundamental proclamation in the Universal Declaration on Human Rights. And each one without exception can use the declaration to gain access to all the rights and freedoms it proclaims. Article 15 states that everyone has a right to a nationality. It goes further to say that no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his nationality, nor denied the right to change his nationality. To have a nationality is not only a question of cultural identity, it also means having papers which say you belong to a particular state. Without them, daily existence can be difficult and even impossible. This new episode of our human rights series takes us to Chad, where Louis Dobalbe met a migrant from Niger with no documents. The report is presented by Victoria Wakil.
We are in Kabylie district, one of the most animated parts of N'Djamena, the capital of Chad. This is where Sanu, a young man aged 23, has found refuge in a small room that he shares with his friends. Sanu had to leave Niger because he was having a relationship with the daughter of a traditional chief, a love story that turned sour.
I was going out with the village chief's daughter and I loved her. But despite our love, we weren't free. Her father hit me and sent me to a jail in Niamey. I stayed a long time. I was treated badly there. When I was released, I escaped. I was scared of Islamic law because Islam frowned upon the relationship I had.
The young man escaped from Niger without any possessions and without his identity papers. After a long trip, he ended up in the city of Bol on the Chadian side of Lake Chad. He stayed for 4 months, but he didn't find any work. Moreover, the region still seemed too close to Niger for him, and he was worried about his safety. His friends advised him to go to the capital, N'Djamena, where he hoped to become more anonymous and to find a job and get papers. So a new journey began.
Friends told me to go to N'Djamena because they said I could earn some money there. But when I arrived, I had to do small jobs, like working the land, removing rocks and bricks, because I didn't have any papers.
Sanu didn't know anybody in the capital. Not knowing how to express himself in any local languages of Chad, and without any papers determining his nationality, the young man ended up on his own.
When I arrived, I slept at Dembe Market. One day I met someone who said I could sleep at his place. There were six of us in a room.
Very quickly, Sanu made friends and started finding his way in the capital of Chad. But he was tormented by the fact that he didn't have any papers. He wanted his status to be regularized. He started inquiring how to do this, and then he went to the UNHCR, the United Nations Refugee Agency. But at that time, the agency was overwhelmed with the crisis in Libya and the number of displaced people. He was not a priority. After many meetings that did not bear fruit, he found a local NGO to help him. The ASPD helps refugees and stateless persons. He convinced them that he was acting in good faith and his case was taken on. Today, he wants to know how it is coming along and whether he will soon have papers. The NGO is located in the area of Shagwa, in a dilapidated building with 3 rooms. Franklin Aladoum is the head. There are many people in similar situations to Sanu, whom Franklin Aladoum wants to help with his NGO. In most cases, he says, they have to be armed with a lot of patience for the long and complicated procedures.
Generally, the first thing to do is to go to the immigration authorities so that their status is regularized. At least they have to have short-term residence permits. But there are many problems. Firstly, at the Ministry of Public Security level, it's not that easy to bring someone along who has no nationality, no documents, and to try to regularize his situation and get a permit for him.
The ASPD does everything it can to support refugees in their administrative procedures so they can get papers. But it does not have enough resources to help them financially. The result, complains Franklin Aladoum, is that many of them are left to their own devices, but he hasn't abandoned Sanu.
We try to help him sometimes with our own personal means. We bring him home to eat with us, give him soap. If he has small health problems, we try to help him, but it's not always easy.
The NGO also tries to get support from other structures, but often without any tangible results.
We always use the people we know. We write to many NGOs. Sometimes the Catholic Church responds. It helps us in a sporadic way, but not that much. So Sanu and others go around and find small jobs which barely bring them a dollar a day. Imagine how difficult it is in a country where the cost of living is so high.
Sanu's main preoccupation, as for others in such irregular situations, is to find something to eat each day. On top of that, people without papers live in constant fear of being discovered and arrested. There is a lot of talk about immigrants without papers in European countries, but it is also a trend in Africa. There are different causes. Some states refuse to give nationality to people who are born or live on a territory because of their ethnic group, their language, or their religion. In this case, one talks of stateless persons. According to the Refugee Agency of the United Nations, UNHCR, there are 12 million of them in the whole world. But one can also end up abroad without papers after escaping quickly and secretly from a country because of war, famine, or political persecution. Whatever the reason, the consequences are similar. Without papers, a person does not have access to health system, to schooling, to legal employment, and it is also impossible to register a marriage or a birth. Someone is not recognized as a complete citizen because they cannot vote. It is also impossible to cross borders freely. Franklin Aladum again.
There are lots of other problems. First, to have the right to work, you have to have papers. They have to know where you're from. You have to have a residence permit. And this is not their case. In the formal sector, they can't do anything. And even in the informal sector, there are inspections. So from time to time, we go to the police to try to get them back, because they are often arrested. We use our contacts to get them out of the situation. It's extremely difficult. They can't do anything at all.
For many of them, it means a long wait with an uncertain outcome. For Sanu, there is no alternative.
If I go back to Niger, I will die. I can't go back there. I only have my mother left. But if I can carry on doing little jobs here, I will send her money so she can come to join me in Chad.
The problem of those without papers, whether they are stateless people or refugees, is not restricted to Chad. It exists everywhere in Africa. It's only with redoubled efforts on the part of governments, civil society, and in cooperation with international organizations like the UNHCR that their situation will be improved and their rights to a nationality will be guaranteed.
And this is the end of our Learning by Ear program for today. Thanks for listening to this program by Louis Dobalbe in Chad as part of our series on human rights.
And now a recap of the stories that we've covered. European and African leaders pledged to work together to fight human trafficking and illegal migration at the end of a two-day summit in Brussels. At least one in every five South Africans lives below the poverty line, and the inequality margin keeps widening. That's according to new statistics. The High Court in Lagos has issued a restraining order preventing the police and state security services from arresting the suspended governor of the central bank, Lamido Sanusi. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. For comments and questions on the stories that you've covered, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW531110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +49 160 957 59510. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time, and I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.